members of Knesset, were instructed to vote against the withdrawal plan. This does not mean that Rabbi Eliashiv is in favor of the occupation. He certainly is not. Rather, he invoked the halachic principle of Bedavar Safek Shev V'al Ta'aseh Odif. If the outcome of a certain action is uncertain, then it is best not to do anything at all. Or, as we might say in English, better the devil you know than the devil you don't. What seems halachically unreasonable, as far as religious Zionist views are concerned, is that the negation of Yeshivat Eretz Yisrael settlement in the land of Israel is not one of the three sins excluded from the Pikuach Nefesh rule. I.e., you are not commanded to lay down your life to prevent the uprooting of a settlement in the biblical land of Israel. And as one of the three exclusions from the rule is the murder of another Jew, indicating that this is one of the gravest sins a Jew can commit, the slide towards civil war, where Jew may kill Jew so that territories are not relinquished, demonstrates to what extent some religious Zionists, including, I'm shocked to say, a former chief rabbi, may have perverted the Jewish faith in their blind dedication to Zionism. Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi Donner, for this thought-provoking and the comment-provoking, I expect, presentation. As moderator, I'd like to take the prerogative and present my own question in order to open the floor. It's my opinion that Zionism could have saved European Judaism if it was acted upon in a timely manner. And it's my opinion that Zionism did save the Jews of Arab lands. I'd like to ask for your position on the nature of the State of Israel, not as a stage in the messianic process or even as a haven, but rather as an essential organ for the spiritual and physical survival of the Jewish people as a whole.
Thank you. I disagree with the first part of your question entirely. Do you really think that Hitler, who was willing to lose the war because he wanted to kill the Jews of Hungary rather than divert the trains and the supplies where they were needed on the Eastern Front, on the Russian front, would not have, if the Israeli state had existed at that time with millions of Jews, not devoted much more attention to Rommel and the battle for North Africa if he knew that he could kill a few more million Jews who at that time in the Zionist state? It's an argument which is proposed by Zionists to say that all those blind people who didn't push harder for the State of Israel before the war are in some way to blame for the fact that 6 million Jews died in the Holocaust. Let me tell you that Hitler had every intention of killing every Jew he could lay his hands on, and had a concentration of Jews, a real concentration, not some 200,000 Jews, but millions of Jews lived in the land of Israel. Believe me, he would have made every attempt to try and kill them there. As far as the second part of your question is concerned, the reality is, and it's a horrible irony of the Galut, we have survived because of our dispersion, not because of our concentration. And that's the reality. The reason why we survived the Holocaust is because Jews were all over the world. They weren't just in Eastern Europe. And the reason why the Jewish people will survive throughout the Galut until the Mashiach times is not because we're all in the State of Israel, but because there's some of us in Canada, some of us in Great Britain, some of us in South Africa, some of us in Australia. Because the irony of our survival is that we were not all in one place. So you might be right. There are tremendous spiritual advantages to being in the land of Israel. And I feel it myself when I'm there. When I come to the land of Israel, I feel spiritually elevated. But then you have to ask the question, why didn't all the great rabbis over the centuries move to the land of Israel? Because we are in Galut. That's a treat for us. To be in the land of Israel is a treat. It's not something which we deserve. We don't deserve it until God decides that we do deserve it. And unfortunately, the hubris of Zionism and of the state's creation has made us blind to the fact that Messiah has not come and is not around the corner, unless we want him to be around the corner, unless we devote our lives to Judaism rather than to protecting a patch of land, however big or small that patch of land may be.
So there's no mundane advantages to the Jewish people for the State of Israel. Mundane, non-religious advantages to the Jewish people as a people. as a group of...
There's advantages in everything, but there's disadvantages as well. I mean, is there an advantage, mundane advantage, in Jews being free to observe and practice their religion in the United States of America and Canada? Of course there is. Should they move to Israel? If they want to, they could. I mean, that in itself, in and of itself, that's not enough of a reason to have a state of Israel, because there may be a mundane advantage. There's tremendous disadvantages. You have an entire generation, two or three generations of Jews in the land of Israel who totally and utterly reject Judaism and see themselves as Israelis. Don't in any way feel as Jews when you meet them on a plane. They don't walk up to you as I would walk up to you if I saw you with a kippah on and say Shalom Aleichem. They see you just as another person, because they're a nation. They're not the Jewish people. They're a nation. And that is a disadvantage. Of course there's tremendous advantages. The one place on earth where practicing Judaism is perfect is the land of Israel. The timing's all right, the weather's right, the things that you need are all around you. That's an advantage, but there's disadvantages as well. You shouldn't use the advantage-disadvantage argument, because that is not enough of an argument to either propose continuation of Zionism or not. I don't think one thing has anything to do with the other. Any further questions? Into the mic.
Yes. When we were at Mount Sinai, we got a contract.
Yes.
We got a God, we got a people, and we got a land.
It's true.
To fissure any of those, whether the Jew decides not to be living with other Jews, or whether the land is with Jewish people taken over by another group, or whether we choose to be secular, we are stuck with this contract.
I agree.
So, wherein do you make a difference between emunah and betachon, where you go out and do something to get your land or keep your people together or do something to be one with God again?
The simple answer to that is, I don't know. Okay? And I don't...
How can you negate one effort?
One thing's for sure, I don't think you know either, nor does anyone in this room know the answer to that question. One thing I do know, that we were dispersed in Galut. And that was seen as the beginning... That was seen as an important aspect of our exilic process. Why that should be, I don't know. Ask God when you get to heaven.
I
strive to live in the Holy Land, but that doesn't mean I have sovereignty in the Holy Land. It doesn't mean I should die to live in Gaza. It doesn't mean that the Jewish people has to completely devote itself to the land of Israel to the exclusion of everything else. There's many other aspects of Judaism which are being overlooked
in this.
I beg your pardon?
You don't have to overlook one to do the other.
Yes, but that's what's happening. Next question.
Yeah, and you just mentioned in the 67 war that the territory that was taken over, the West Bank, etc., was not condoned by the international community.
Yes.
I just wondered how that fits with halakha in terms of going with the international community. And the second part is, again, how the international community treated it differently than any other war where a country was attacked and where they, you know...
Two good questions. I've treated it slightly, but I'm happy you're bringing it up. What we hate to acknowledge as Jews in this era of the State of Israel is that we're only in the State of Israel by the grace of the nations that allow us to be there. And by the grace of God, who gives, for some strange reason, the nations the idea that the Jews should reclaim the land of Israel. Because we are still in Galut. It's hard for us to even acknowledge that. But that's what we are. Now, when we conquered the territory in 1967, and since that time, for whatever reason, you can say that it's bias, you can say that it's anti-Semitism, you can say it's anti-Zionism, call it what you like. There has been absolutely no friend or enemy of Israel that has seen any reason for Israel to settle in those territories and then exit into the State of Israel. Now, whether or not you ideologically agree with that, or I ideologically agree with that, is frankly irrelevant. And halakhically, it's certainly irrelevant, because unless the land belongs to you, you are a usurper of that land. And the land certainly doesn't belong to us by divine right, as Zionism would have us believe. It belongs to us if and when some international body, like the UN did in 1947, that in fact was more miraculous than the declaration of the State of Israel. 1947, for some strange reason, both the United States and Soviet Russia decided to vote so that Israel should come into creation. That is what gave us the mandate to be within whatever boundaries we finally ended up with in 1949. Beyond 1967, we are in land that, of course, biblically has connections to the people of Israel, but legally, we have absolutely no hegemony over that land. None whatsoever. Now, you can say that we create facts on the ground and we built settlements and therefore it's now no longer tenable to take 150,000 people outside of the West Bank settlements where they've settled. That may be true, and that may be in a final peace deal, the lines will be redrawn to take that into account. But halachically, we have no right whatsoever to be in that land, and legally, internationally, that's what it's based on. We have no right to be in those lands. I think that answers both of your questions. Yes?
I have a problem, a little bit of a problem with what you just said. First of all, I think you made a statement that doesn't jive with my understanding. I mean, I understand the distinction you're trying to make in that today, maybe, you know, we shouldn't say that we're not allowed to give back the territories for peace, or we're not because God gave us that land. The fact is, God did give us that land, and to say that it's only ours because some UN body decided. I think the UN body is irrelevant. I think it's much more relevant to what the Torah. Having said that, I don't advocate blowing up the Dome of the Rock. I mean, in the future, I hope that's going to be decided by the Migdash. It's not up to me to go and blow it
that's
up.
Right.
It's up to something else to happen.
Yes.
So I understand that. But by the same token, to use that argument to say that we have no rights to that land, that's not true either, because the history is it certainly wasn't owned by the people by the Palestinians who are there now. That's a fact that they a historical revision they've been trying to create. The fact is, as the gentleman pointed out, that we're there because we were in a defensive war, we occupied that territory, and in every other defensive war in the world, the nation who has taken the territory has been allowed to annex that land. Now, we haven't chosen to do that for whatever reason, and it may not be politically, you know, you have to look at it on a political and as I think you pointed out before, you know, what's the result? Is the result that is it going to be strategically better or rather security-wise better or worse for us? That's the way you have to look at it. But to say that to make the statement as you did before that it's only by the graces of the UN that we own that land. I think that's.
I didn't say that. I said that in a galut in which we find ourselves, we're not in a messianic age. We are not, I repeat, not in a messianic age. Until such time as the Mashiach is declared, the Mashiach comes, we're in an age where we are at the whim of the nations amongst whom we have been sent into exile. Whether those nations are represented by the United Nations, whether they're represented by the United States of America or other foreign powers, that's not the relevant point. It may, at that time, it was Rome, wasn't it? And then subsequently, it was all types of other nations. It was Turkey, England, who knows who. But we are the whim of those nations. And the state of Israel wasn't created because God gave it to us. It may be that ultimately God wanted us to have the land of Israel. But the state of Israel was created by a UN vote in 1947. Even the most ardent religious Zionists will have to accept that. And as far as the security issues are concerned, you know, I wish it was true that all religious Zionists would say what you've just said, but they don't. A former chief rabbi of Israel has said that civil disobedience is called for, that absolutely no one should give up the land, because it's halachically not permissible to give up the land of Israel. That's using halachic terminology in a situation that you are admitting to me is political and strategic. That's disingenuous at best. Next question.
Okay, now I am biased. I'm living 27 years in Israel. I served in the Israeli army. And you are biased because you're living outside. But I must say, and I say this with the greatest amount of respect, I believe that you are overlooking many facts and that the situation is much more complex than what you just said. Now, I understand within an hour you are not able to go into all the details, but I think you are really overlooking major issues here. I mention only one or two of them. First of all, the issue of a right to the land no doubt has nothing to do with what the UN decides or for that reason anybody else decides within the international community. I'll tell you an interesting thing. Jean-Paul Sartre, one of the great French philosophers who died several years ago, who was totally irreligious and had no connection with Yahadut whatsoever, wrote an article in one of the French papers at the time where he made the following point. He says, you can't judge the state of Israel like an other political entity like you can do about any other political entity. The reason, he says, is quite obvious. The Jews are the only ones around for 4,000 years. They have lived for most of the time outside the country, outside Israel. But, and that is a complete miracle to us and an astonishing fact, is that they outlived all their enemies. With all the trouble which they had, with all the things, they were the ones who were overtaken by the Romans, by the Greeks, by the Persians, by the Germans. And on the end of the day, all these nations disappeared, except for the Jews. And not yet with the Germans. All the great nations who stood up against them and were not able to overtake them and make an end to their existence indicates that there is, even from a secular perspective from which I, Sartre, come, indicates that Israel and the Jewish people stand outside normal history. And therefore, he wrote, I state as a secular philosopher that you cannot treat Israel in the same way as you treat any other nation within the United Nations or international law. Why? Because they don't fit to the conditions under which you can do that. In other words, he was saying like this, I will always stand behind Israel because it does not fit into the normality of other nations. Because everything what that history teaches us shows us that the people of Israel are a separate nation and therefore need to be dealt with from a different perspective. That's one thing which is very important in this whole discussion. And that is not the question if we have legally, yes or no, a right to the land, but it is the question of an historical religious situation which goes back for thousands of years, which now plays itself out within history, and therefore the situation cannot be dealt from the point of view as you would perhaps like to deal with it. Number one. Number two, I think you are mistaken about and also think about the Israeli society. I have been living in that society for 27 years, but I've also been very involved in the dialogue between the religious and the non-religious, in the army and outside the army. In the army, you get everybody, you see everybody, you live together with them, not like we do when we live in, let's say, in our different religious or irreligious parts of Jerusalem, but there we live together. And the discussions are enormous. I think I did more discussion than actually serving as a soldier. But what it taught me
is a Jewish army, of course.
In a Jewish army. What it taught me is an interesting thing. The reading of people like Rav Shach, and I say this with the greatest amount of respect because I really greatly admire Rav Shach, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, was wrong when it came to the understanding of the Israeli mind. If you know about, there's a study done several years ago of the Avichai Foundation in America, in Israel, funded by Americans, where they looked into the question to what extent is the general Israeli population somehow connected with Yiddishkeit, with some kind of Jewish tradition. Now, I always thought, all my life that I lived there, I was told more or less like this. The vast majority of Israelis have got no connection whatsoever. It is only a small amount which consider themselves or Orthodox or what we call in Hebrew Masorati, which means to say traditionally inclined. But the vast majority is altogether out. So they made a study of that. They came to totally different conclusions. What it showed was this, more or less, 20% of Israelis consider themselves Orthodox. 20% of Israelis on the other side consider themselves completely secular. But the 60% in between, in all sorts of different dimensions and contradictions and strange situations, all feel that they are connected with the Jewish tradition on some level. Which, for example, is shown in the fact that over 90% of Israelis happen to have a mezuzah on the door. Nearly everybody makes sure that the Brit Milah will be taken place in case they have a child. The vast majority, I don't remember the percentage, but it's over 80%, will fast on Yom Kippur, maybe watching at the same time a movie on television. An enormous amount of people Friday night will go to shul and make kiddush at home and then go out for a soccer game. All sort of different combinations which we in the Galut may not know about, but they do exist there. And the Avichai Foundation came to a very interesting conclusion. The country is much more Jewishly inclined, religiously Jewishly inclined, than we think. Problem is that the people who are writing in the papers, and to a certain extent the people who are serving in the government, are indeed people who belong to or this group, the 20% on one side, or the 20% on the other side. In other words, the Knesset does not at all represent the real situation, what is going on in Israel. So therefore, when Rav Shach spoke openly against many of them, as he did on several occasions, he misread what actually was going on. Reason is, and he can't help that, is because he got the wrong information from the people who were giving him this information. But we know, because we have looked carefully into this, that it is actually quite different. And therefore, we have to rethink this whole thing over. I don't want to go into halachic issues here, because you said so many different things that I don't even remember all anymore, each point where I would agree or disagree. What I do agree with you on, fully and totally, is that obviously Israel cannot just be a place where you run to because of anti-Semitism. That was a big mistake which Zionists at the time tried to say. They also have made another mistake. They want to normalize the Jewish people in the land. We are abnormal as long as we are living as a nation between also nations. Now when we go back home, we will normalize ourselves. Indeed, what happens now is that there's nothing coming about of this. Israelis are now, in fact, I can tell you that also for quite sure, waking up because of the Palestinian situation, and they're saying, wait a moment, we realize that the state of Israel was not a response to anti-Semitism. It did not solve the problem. In fact, now it seems that it is creating the problem. But what we do understand because of that is that our connection with this land is on a completely different level, which has got nothing to do with politics, with international relationships. What it has to do with, indeed, is a certain connection to the Jewish tradition. And that is our way in. The Haredi community still does not get this. I agree with you on the other side, very much so, that this whole messianic approach, which is in the Gush, as we call it in Israel, the Gush Emunim settlers who believe that the Mashiach is coming any moment and therefore they really want to create facts at home, or better, on the ground, which are messianic, incredibly dangerous. But the truth is that it is quite different than I think you presented it, or at least the impression which you gave. One last point I want to make. It is true that Israel should exist because it is a Jewish nation, or because of Judaism, not because of anti-Semitism. You don't build a nation on the ashes of Auschwitz by just saying you're starting to build something there because of a negation. But on the other side, I can tell you one thing. I've lived my good part of my life in Goetzlaritz, in Holland mainly, and in England afterwards. When you say that it is less dangerous in France than it is, for example, in Israel, I disagree. I very much disagree, and I'll tell you why. It's not because there are no dangers in Israel. There are sincere dangers there. But the difference is this. If, God forbid, something will happen to my children or my grandchildren in Israel, I know there's a whole nation around there. We need to do anything to save them, to stand behind them, and to make sure that they are being looked after. That particular guarantee I will not get in England, I will not get in Holland, I will not get in America, because I am a minority there. Secondly, and again I say this with pride, having served in the Israeli army, the fact also is that we have an Israeli army. And the Israeli army is a fantastic feeling, which we all have. Because the truth about it is that my children are all married, my grandchildren can play in the streets openly in every part of Jerusalem without any problem. There's always a chance that somebody will trigger off a bomb, that's true. But I wonder if you can do that in London, or if you can do that in, let's say, any other country. That can only be done in Israel. And you have to take that into account as well. It is easy to say, well, you know what, it is perhaps better to live in France because there are less dangers there. I do not agree. It is definitely much more dangerous there. For one reason, we are a minority there, and if it comes to the moment that they need to help us, they won't be there.
Okay, thank you. I'll tackle your points 1, 2, and 3. The first point was Jean-Paul Sartre. Of course, it's an echo of something said by Mark Twain 100 years before him, who said something very similar. And I've heard this before, and it's an argument that's used very often, the fact that we've outlived all our enemies. It's a very fickle argument, and the reason it's fickle is because of an interview that I once saw by an Israeli newspaper in the late 1960s with an Arab in Hebron. And the newspaper interviewer said to him, "How do you feel about the fact that your town, your city, Hebron, has been occupied by Israeli forces?" And he said, "My family has been in Hebron for 2,000 years. Everyone's been here. The Romans, the Byzantines, the Turks, the British. Now it's the Jews. So what? They'll come, they'll go." So I don't agree with him. Do you understand? I understand, but I don't agree with him. But that type of emotive argument is not one that is substantial enough to justify some of the excesses of Zionist philosophy. The second thing is, you mentioned... Huh? Okay. Very, very quickly. The second point was Rav Shach and his understanding of secular Jews in Israel. I don't disagree with you that there's a much larger proportion of interest in Judaism than many in the Haredi world would believe. I think there's a tremendous distrust of Judaism, mainly, and ironically, because of the fact that Haredi Judaism or observant Judaism, all types of Judaism, is seen through the prism of the Knesset and politics. So even those secular Jews who do make Kiddush on Friday night and who do fast on Yom Kippur don't identify that with Torah observant Judaism, which they would see in Bnei Brak and Yerushalayim. That's very ironic, but it's true. And as such, his conclusion that Zionism and Zionist politicians are not driven by Torah is, whilst two-dimensional because of his lack of knowledge of the non-observant community in Israel, is not too far away from the truth. And that, I must conclude. The third point that you made was about the safety of your grandchildren in playgrounds in Israel. I'm not sure I agree with you. I think that that the safety issue is not necessarily worse or better in any country that you live. There's Israeli criminals, there's Israeli paedophiles, there's all types of problems in Israel which go beyond the rosy picture which you paint. And as much as your children playing in the playground feel safe, and that's wonderful, I'm sure there's places in Israel where they wouldn't feel safe, in certain areas of Tel Aviv or Holon or wherever. The fact that the Israeli army is a source of pride is a source of pride to me too, but that is only because there's a $3 billion a year grant by the American government to support the military situation of Israel. If you would pull the plug on $3 billion of whatever it is that the American government gives to Israel, I'm not sure how successful the military would be in Israel. So again, we're there by the grace of nations outside of Israel and outside of the sphere of our control, in the same way as I am in the diaspora, the grace of the British government and the British political forces. So it may seem different, but that's a subjective view, it's not an objective view. I'll conclude here by saying that I'm perfectly happy to address any questions which were not addressed to me during the course of this Q&A, and thank you for your attention and your politeness. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to have our last session. We have door prizes at the end of the day for those